Welcome to the Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. I'm your host, Lewis Rogers, founder and CEO of Capital Square. My friend and colleague of many years, Rick Chess, joins us from Chess Law. Welcome, Rick. First, our favorite, Section 1031, a golden oldie. Would you say we've done this presentation dozens of times?
Oh, you and I have probably done it hundreds of times. What the folks are going to get in the next 3 minutes sometimes can be a six-hour course. But the bottom line, why we keep coming back to 1031 is, as I understand it, Lewis, it's not like a small number of real estate transactions happen as 1031. It's a pretty large percentage, isn't it?
Yes, it's a substantial percentage that drive the economy. The gist of it is the tax that would be paid in a taxable transaction is deferred. It's deferred until you sell the replacement property in a taxable transaction, but you as the taxpayer have the ability to control that sale. So the next one could be an exchange and the next one could be an exchange. And you can exchange over and over again in a series of transactions we call, do you remember what we call it?
Oh, it's swap to your drop. And what's great about this, and I try to translate some of this complicated stuff into day-to-day. Almost everybody on the radio show today has done an IRA, has done a 401k. It's the same basic concept. The federal government is saying, if you will stay in what you're doing, in this case, real estate, and not put any money in your pocket, you're not going to recognize a gain. It's really basic stuff that's been around for 100 years. Why people overcomplicate it, I don't know, but it really keeps the economy going.
And what qualifies is broad. It's investment property, it's business property, but it's not your principal residence.
Right.
You have a special rule for your principal residence, and that is tax forgiveness of $250,000 or $500,000 with spouse. In the opportunity zone world, if you hold an opportunity zone fund investment for 10 years, you get exclusion, and you get that on your principal residence, $250,000, $500,000 with spouse. 1031 is not exclusion, it's forgiveness. It's deferral, not forgiveness, but you can have deferral over and over and over again.
I've heard people hear the 10 years for opportunity zone and have said, oh, well, I don't want to go into a 1031 DST because it's going to be tied up for 10 years. Let's make a distinction there.
Yes. Well, 1031, you hold as long as you would like. For the opportunity zone benefits, you have to hold for a full 10 years.
Okay, great. So it's very flexible, the 1031.
1031 is very flexible. Again, it defers the taxes, federal and state. It doesn't forgive them, but you can hold forever. You have the ability to build family wealth over time. We have many exchangers who are on their sixth, seventh, eighth exchange. In doing the exchange, you can acquire different replacement property.
Okay.
You could acquire a higher quality replacement property. You could acquire a net leased property instead of a property you have to manage. A lot of opportunities.
So it's not just, you know, not having all your eggs in the same basket, but you can have eggs in
different
one
baskets.
Basket. You could have a chicken in another basket. You have a watermelon in another basket. I mean, think about it. It's like, you know, Thanksgiving dinner. We don't just want to eat turkey. This really does give the investors an opportunity to diversify the same way they're diversifying what they eat.
Or stocks and bonds. And with the Delaware Statutory Trust investments, you could diversify into a portfolio, Class A apartments, Class B apartments, industrial, medical, some with leverage, some all cash. So it gives you the opportunity to diversify. And then there is the ultimate tax shelter. Unfortunately, you have to die to get it. But under current law, when you die, your heirs get a step up in basis, which allows them to sell a property without paying a tax. That's also under attack in Congress. So lots of benefits. The theory of 1031 is continuity of investment. You started with real estate, you ended with real estate. You didn't receive any cash. And if you receive any cash or non-like-kind property, we call it BOOT, you're taxable, but only to that extent.
Is this complicated where they're going to have to pay, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for attorneys and all the rest? Or is it pretty straightforward?
It's really simple. It's become almost rote at this point. Just another little nuance to your closing. We talked about why exchange, the tax deferral, the tax that would be paid is deferred, and it can be deferred a long time, all the way to your entire lifetime. There's also the opportunity to change your type of real estate. Let's say you have non-income producing property land. You can exchange that for income producing property. And so maybe you inherited a farm or a ranch. It may be worth a lot of money, but generates no income. Exchange that for an income producing property and change your world. Also, you may have management intensive property. Let's say you have rental apartments, tenants, toilets, and trash. You've had apartments before, right?
I did. And everything you say about it is true. It's like you think you've made this great investment, but what you bought is, rather than your money working for you, you're working for your money. And I love apartments. Right. I bought 50,000 apartments in my career. But at 66, I don't want those responsibilities anymore.
So exchange your management intensive property for a DST that's passive or a net lease. And then lastly, from Willie in Stafford, who was a really good exchanger, said, if somebody's willing to overpay for my property, I'm going to sell it to them, say sell it in quotation marks, in an exchange and steal a property from somebody not as smart as me. Willie said, is 1031 a red flag for an IRS audit? And I told him, no, the statistics are very low. 1031's been in the code. How long, Rick?
100 years.
100 years. This is congressional intent, and our Congress people use 1031. And the IRS and Treasury have given us hundreds of private and published rulings and regulations to make 1031 work for everybody. So you don't need to worry. It's not a red flag for an audit. You do have to exchange like-kind property, but basically, if it's real estate or real estate, it's like-kind.
The basic rules, I think, are there that if you give somebody in your role, my role, a little bit of time, we can help position you to be able to accomplish a 1031 exchange. It really helps the economy, et cetera. We need to talk about what's going on in Washington. I've just been getting very nervous of what they're talking about. And I'm a Democrat, but it scares me some of the things that are coming out of it. What's your sense of what's going to happen in Washington on 1031?
It's really tricky business. The Senate passed a budget resolution, $3.5 trillion. It hasn't been scored yet, but when it's scored, it might well be $5.5 trillion. And it passed on one of those 50 to 49 votes with one Republican out and our vice president ready to pass the 51st vote if necessary. So that's what's on the horizon. But first, what did the president propose? He proposed a cap on gains under 1031 of $500,000. That would essentially kill 1031. It's very bad news. It's a part of a package of bad news. And the bad news only gets worse because capital gains would be taxed at the same rate as ordinary income. And that's in the ballpark of 200% increase. Every time you sell something, the tax would potentially double or more. Not good for the economy. Not good for transactions. People don't transact when taxes are too high. I believe during the Kennedy administration, it was discovered that between 22 and 27% is the optimal rate where people sell, they report, they transact, they pay tax. You get much over 27% and the tax bogs things down. So 1031 cap would essentially kill it for many people, capital gains doubling. And then the step up in basis, when you die, your heirs get a step up in basis of the assets of the estate to the fair market value. That means they don't have to sell to pay the taxes. That would be modified or eliminated as a part of the Biden American Families Plan. That would require families to sell their assets to pay their taxes. It would be some kind of a horrible John Steinbeck thing, like the tumbleweeds and the farm being sold and having to take the buckboard and work somewhere.
Does anybody remember COVID? Do you remember what happened to the economy? We stopped having transactions, how everything ground to a halt. And this legislative proposal would essentially grind to a halt the very thing that's been allowing for improvements in real estate, improvements in community. It really is, well, I think the technical word is stupid.
I'm with you, and the real estate industry is with you. We and our colleagues have been lobbying, not just this year, but for the past 5 years. We've had a lot of educational sessions with our friends and staff members in Washington. We've mounted a vibrant defense to preserve 1031. We focused on Democrats in the House and the Senate, who are close to the president, and members of tax writing committees. We've made great inroads. The real estate industry prepared. We had a number of economic studies prepared to determine the value of 1031. The first one is named after two economists, Ling and Petrova. They're PhDs. They updated the statistics last year, and they prepared a microeconomic study focused on commercial real estate. And secondly, Ernst & Young EY updated their numbers in May of this year, 2021, and they prepared a macroeconomic study. They focused on direct and indirect economic activity generated by Section 1031, and it was prepared by two PhDs at Ernst & Young. The numbers are astounding. The Biden proposal assumed that when you sold a property after the effective date, you would just pay the tax. They didn't realize that many people would hold their properties forever and not sell their property taxable. And so their numbers are not realistic. Let's talk about Ling and Petrova. Microeconomic study concluded that 10 to 20% of all commercial real estate transactions are 1031 exchanges now. I believe that number is understated. Been to a lot of settlements, handled a lot of exchanges as a tax lawyer, as a qualified intermediary, as a sponsor selling DSTs. And I believe it's closer to 25 or 30% of all transactions. Now, let's just say it's 10 or 20%. If those transactions were to stop because of the tax, what would happen to the real estate economy?
It just grinds to a halt. I think about here in Richmond, where we are trying to improve certain areas. If you didn't have 1031, people would just sit on their property and it would become slummy. Yeah, you know, we've had that. I mean, in another area in New York where you had controls of rent, you had properties just falling apart because there was no sense in spending money. Now you're going to do that nationally?
Makes no sense. And what Ling and Petrova concluded is that 1031 preserves capital. It encourages capital improvements. When the new buyer of a property comes in with capital, they upgrade the property. That creates jobs. It adds to the state and local tax base. Overall, it creates greater investment. We know that 1031 buyers invest more capital into their replacement property than non-1031 buyers. And we know that exchanges create greater equity, lower leverage. In other words, exchangers use less debt than regular cash buyers. That reduces the credit risk for investors and lenders. Exchangers have a shorter holding period. And because of the exchange, property is liquid. It's marketable. It moves. And when it moves, somebody's getting paid and somebody's paying tax. And lots of good things happen from a tax standpoint, including dock stamps in Florida. Florida, Texas, no income tax, but big transfer taxes. In other states, not such big transfer taxes, but assessments go up. If there's no transactions, no transfer taxes, no assessment increases, the local governments will lose an enormous amount of funding.
I worked in Allegheny County up in Pittsburgh in the law department and saw where things like this, if you slow down the natural pace of growth in a community, the whole community starts suffering. Values go down, tax collections go down, quality of schools go down. It is a ripple effect.
It's bad news. And we have a shortage of housing. No, Rick, you were with United Dominion REIT.
Yep.
Housing is essential, and we have a shortage of housing. 38% of all exchanges involve multifamily housing. Do we really want to impact housing? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, I think what's going on, Lewis, and we've seen this over the years, you get elected, and even though you got elected by the slimmest of margins, you assume you have a landslide in your favor. And so you're trying to shove in all these different things that you may have been talking about for 10 years. And it really, no one's thinking about 5 years from now. They're not even thinking about next week. It's like, can we get this thing passed? So I want to thank all the people from our prior shows who then reached out to us, reached out to their Congress members, their Senate members, to at least say, you know, I hate to keep saying it, but don't be stupid. And unfortunately, there's a whole lot of stupid that happens in elected office, having been there myself.
You were once an elected representative, so I guess you know firsthand.
I do. I know that man in the mirror.
The conclusion from Ling and Petrova is elimination of 1031 would do two things. It would decrease transactional activity, and it would impact real estate prices roughly 6%. So if you own investment property and you don't write to your congressperson, and there's a 6% reduction in value, it's on you for not speaking out. It would also increase holding periods, increase the cost of capital, leverage and rents, and rents would have to go up 6%. And so there's a shortage of housing. Rents are already going up. COVID has stressed housing, and eliminating 1031 would make that even worse. Now, the argument about 1031 and needing the tax revenue is not very strong, because in a 1031 exchange, your tax basis carries over. That means you start with low basis, you end with lower basis. That means your depreciation deductions are low compared to a cash purchaser. And the statistics show that 63% of the tax deferral is recovered by Treasury through reduced depreciation deductions. So a little bit of revenue, a lot of loss, and the tax expenditure is overstated. There's static scoring. You ask a PhD, if we eliminate 1031, how much tax would be generated if every exchange were taxable? And they can tell you the number. And that's the number that's plugged into the budget. But I'm here to tell you, if 1031 went away, many real estate owners would hold and refinance every 10 years, and they would hold forever. And so the tax expenditures are dramatically overstated. What did Ernst & Young say would come from eliminating 1031?
It was devastating. That study was able to help people realize that, whoa, what might save the government a small amount of money in 1 year was going to be devastating loss across state and federal and local government over 10 years.
They talk about this lock-in effect. Would you take a moment and describe that for our audience?
If you essentially become locked into the property and you know you can't sell it for a profit because you're going to get devastated with the taxes, you quit putting money in. You quit improving the community. Very quickly, you can go from a growing neighborhood to a shrinking neighborhood, meaning less money coming in, less people want to live there, there's less taxes collected. It just has this ongoing negative effect on the community. And at the end of the day, while not everybody is going to do a 1031 transaction, we all live in a neighborhood. We all work in a community. We all pay taxes. And something like this that's going to have a deleterious impact on all of us, it needs a lot more of attention.
Let's summarize the EY study. In 2021, 1031 exchanges will support, Ernst & Young believes, 568,000 jobs, over 500,000 jobs, $27.5 billion of labor income, over $55 billion of value add to the economy. And they go on to say that the exchange activity is understated. When Lingan Petrova said 20%, I think it's more like 30%. And so I think it's more accurate that 1031 creates over 700,000 jobs, over $34 billion of labor income, over $69 billion of value added to the U.S. economy. That's Ernst & Young's conclusion, that exchanges contribute to federal, state, and local tax revenue. $7.8 billion per year in federal, state, and local taxes are paid in exchanges, $5 billion federal, $2.8 billion state and local, plus $6 billion per year of additional income taxes due to foregone depreciation. Remember, you have low carryover tax basis. Tax basis is what you use to compute your depreciation deductions. And so you've given up a large amount of your depreciation by doing an exchange. So that's the PhD view, 1031. While you don't pay a tax on the capital gain from the sale, you do pay taxes on virtually everything else, including the rent from your tenant.
Is there anything that you're sensing from Washington, though, that maybe rationality has a chance to make it?
Yes, there's some sign of rationality. After 40 legislative lobbying sessions, we're now starting to hear from staff in Washington. Oh, you're the real estate group. Oh, yes, 1031 exchanges don't generate any real revenue. It's not worth the trouble because we'll lose jobs. As congresspeople, we need to create jobs in our districts. Taking away jobs and state and local and federal taxes is not smart. Now we get into the Senate's budget resolution. This is 14 hours into a legislative session on a budget that is stated to be $3.5 trillion budget. After 14 hours that passed, 50-49, in a uniquely Senate procedure called budget resolution, matters could pass on a 50-50 with the vice president voting in favor. This was 50-49 because one of the Republicans was out. It wouldn't have mattered because 50-50 would have been 50-50 plus the vice president. And so this budget resolution was passed at 4 a.m, and it included all sorts of wonderful things involving the climate and social initiatives and increased taxes, lots of wonderful things. And then during a process called Votorama, where their amendments submitted back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Finally, 4 a.m., Senator John Kennedy, Republican from Louisiana, offered an amendment. And the question was, is this the final amendment? If it is, we want to have a voice vote without naming any of us. And his proposal was to retain 1031 in its current fashion. By voice vote, unanimously, the Senate adopted the John Kennedy proposal not to amend 1031. That's a non-binding budget resolution. The House will come back shortly and work on their own bills. The two have to be reconciled, but we now have a sense of the Senate on the record not to amend 1031. Senator Kennedy said that President Biden's tax and spending binge would be a direct tax on the middle class, and he wants to make that load heavier by limiting tax deferrals through like-kind exchanges. The senator goes on to say, like-kind exchanges directly benefit middle America by creating jobs and affordable housing. Congress should pursue economic policies that multiply opportunity and productivity. And I'm glad the Senate voted for an amendment that will support middle and working class America. I was quoted in one of our trade papers as saying this is a very positive step in the right direction, but it's not binding. The amendment shows that the real estate industry's lobbying efforts are paying off, that we're getting noticed among staff and in Congress, but we're just at the beginning of this unprecedented legislation. We have a long way to go. The industry has to remain vigilant. We all have to keep our nose to the grindstone because the House will come up with their bill. The Senate will reconcile. And in reconciliation, it would be a 50-50 vote with the vice president breaking the tie, 51. And so you could essentially pass a ham sandwich in the Senate if the Senate decided to use all of their power to get something passed. What should our members do? What's the call to action? Where do you go to voice your concern?
I think the best one is you go to 1031buildsamerica.org. 1031buildsamerica.org.
If you go to the 1031buildsamerica.org website, you simply fill in some information and a letter is produced for you. This is Lewis Rogers. You're listening to The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Invest in real estate. Invest locally. Invest nationally. Invest on a tax advantage basis with Capital Square. Join us next week to learn more about tax advantaged real estate investing. Living in the sweet Virginia
breeze. Sweet Virginia breeze. The Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors, LLC, is broadcast as an information service and includes opinions as to buying, selling, and holding various investments. However, the host, Lewis Rogers, is not licensed to give any financial, tax, or other investment advice or recommendations. Accordingly, any data and information discussed is provided for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended to be an offer or solicitation to invest in any particular investment. You should never make an investment decision based solely off the information discussed on this broadcast. If you are seeking investment, tax, or legal advice, you should consult with a registered investment advisor, financial, tax, or legal professional of your choosing. Opinions and views expressed on this broadcast are opinions and views based on research gathered through what we believe to be reputable sources. Although we believe these sources to be accurate and reliable, in no way do we represent or guarantee the accuracy thereof, nor the accuracy of the statements made on this broadcast. Listeners should independently verify all claims on this broadcast and conduct their own due diligence before investing in any securities or investments, including any mentioned on this broadcast. Investing in securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk.